Good afternoon. Our next presenter is James Shepherds from USDA, and his presentation will be on the review evaluation of commercial offerings of models and products for improving fertilizer management.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon to wherever you might be in the world or in this country. This is a unique opportunity for me to look into the audience and see many friends, people I've worked with, and I assume there'll be many out in the country that might also know me. I retired from USDA about 8 years ago, so this is a special activity for me. What I'm going to do is my presentation, it comes in two parts. The first one, I'm going to talk about some commercially available nitrogen management tools. These are examples. They're not a complete list, but what I'm going to end with then is a discussion of, I'll call them a science-based assessment activity that is geared toward nitrogen use efficiency and profitability for the farmers. But along the way, we have to talk about yield, implications of nutrient losses, environmental implications. So that's how we're going to end up. About a year ago, I was approached by the Fluid Fertilizer Foundation to summarize some of these nitrogen management tools. They didn't want short 3 or 4 minute presentations of how great every one of these tools is. They wanted it sort of put together and summarized. So that's what I did. I identified some of the more prominent, I'll call them vendors right now, identified those, went to their websites, and then populated that website, or populated that big table here, based on how they handled some of the things like weather and soils and crop growth models, this sort of thing. So when I got done populating that as best I could, I sent it out to each one of these vendors. I said, I know it's not right, not perfect, but please edit this as you see fit. So most of them, all but one, sent it back to me. And so what you're going to see are bits and pieces now coming from how they populated the table, and we're going to go forth. These are the 10 people, 10 groups that I selected. These are examples now. I've also tried to identify maybe the major activity that goes along with their company. You'll see that there's a couple of genetic ones at the top, but there's also 3 consulting companies in there. Why 3? Well, they're uniquely different in how they deal with producers and how they use remote sensing or other kinds of activities. So we'll talk a little bit about those. The most comprehensive ones are at the top, and least and simple ones that amount to basically a service or a tool are at the bottom. So these are the considerations. We started with goal. It says, what are you trying to do? What do you want to do? And then work down through the list in terms of climate, soil, water. We won't get through all of these, but we'll get through most of them. And I'll tell you now that I will provide you with an Excel spreadsheet with this thing all filled out later. So the goals. I've listed them now for each one of the companies. There's some very creative wordsmithing goes on in here. But anyway, I tried to color code these a bit. Profitability and yield are in blue. Some of the production and risk management are in the other colors. But the common feature is really yield and profitability. These are the first 6. Here's the next 4. They still emphasize profitability, yield. The last 2 are a little different. The second to the last one, this is yield 360. So they're providing a product. The last one is remote sensing. Stat shots, but it might be very similar to farm logs, You may be familiar with one called Farm Shots. So they're very similar, but they're providing some aspect of nitrogen management. And these are the examples I'm going to use. So in terms of climate, there's a lot of weather stations out there located strategically around the country. Folks have access to these, but also there's a number of weather stations that are either purchased by producers, or in some cases, they're given to producers at a very reasonable rate. And the companies who are providing these weather stations now upload the data, integrate it, and sell it. To the extent to which they peddle this information, I don't know that. I'm sure it varies. But there's also, if you're in the Midwest, there's a mesonet, or a network of weather stations. At the bottom there's an indication where the High Plains Regional Climate Center is a compository where you can get access to all this information. In some cases, now farmers always want the information now, and they want it for my farm type thing. So some of the vendors are using radar to help them better understand and estimate early on where the rainfall was likely to occur. In the case of Encirca, they have teamed up with DTN to acquire that network of about 3,000 weather stations. So the yellow ones on here, those represent the normal weather stations. There's 3,000 blue ones that now represent those that are on individual farms or signed up through DTN in different ways. So in that way, the idea is we'll get a little better localization of the rainfall in that area. How about soils? Well, we all know about NRCS and the Sergo data set that's out there and available. If you know your latitude and longitude or your legal description, you can go get at this. And in some cases, these tools have figured out a way and written software to go in and retrieve this kind of information almost automatically. How about water processes? What I found were basically two categories, one infiltration and the other one hydrology. Only a couple of them even talk about hydrology. Most of it is dealing with infiltration and how it moves, their models move water through that soil profile. And for the most part, they're going at a very simplistic way. I call it a tipping bucket rain gauge. What that means is you have to fill up one horizon before it can go into the next one. I'll show you some examples. The internet is really good about offering some picturesque ideas about how this works. But you've got a funnel, a way to concentrate the rainfall. At the bottom, you've got a teeter-totter, one way or the other. Fills up one side, goes to the other. These are calibrated probably to about a 1/100th of an inch, so tips back and forth and records it someplace. Here's another picture that is more explicit, shows you what's happening. But the thought I wanted to pass on to you is that this may not be all that realistic when you think about a field with variable depth of topsoil, and so you've got different situations within the field. Taken a little bit further, this is one field. Now think about different soils around the country. Different kinds of impeding layers, sand, clay, you name it. There's a lot of variability out there. So it's a reason to be a little bit cautious or ask a lot of questions. What about earthworms, root channels? They all influence how this water is going to move through the soil. This brings into the effect cultural practices. So it becomes a very complicated process. But unless you go to a lot of mathematics and collect a lot of data, this is probably as good as we're going to get right now. I'll show you this example where folks have out of curiosity, wanted to know where the water goes. Mixed up some water with some blue dye in it, put it on the soil, let it infiltrate it, dig a hole, see where it goes. So you'll see all kinds of impeding layers, and then it shows up down deeper because of root channels or for other reasons. So the internet contains a lot of these pictures. So you can go search those for yourself. Now we need to talk about the models. Models are a number of different categories. Nitrogen recommendation algorithms are really a model, and most of these will deal with residual nitrogen, organic matter, those kind of things. One of the key things is mineralization, and these are infected or affected by climate, of course, water status of the soil. So this becomes a little more complicated, but it's a really important source of nitrogen in some cases. So is nitrogen losses. And many of these tools simulate, based on water, temperature, those kind of things, they'll simulate mineralization as well as losses. Now about crop growth. Well, you put all these together and you end up with the farmer saying, oh my gosh, how do I deal with all this? Maybe it's a black box. And it's complicated, but I will say that a lot of these crop growth models, they go back many years. They have some very sound components in them, and so they're not truly a black box. I found a very interesting cartoon on the internet. These two gentlemen are at the blackboard working on some kind of equation. It says, I think we should be more explicit in step two. If you can't see that, it says, then a miracle happens. Well, it's your judgment. But don't overlook these models. I think that they're going to get us a long ways down the road. But if you're talking about one of these tools, be sure and ask some questions about them. The 800-pound gorilla in all this is the weather, of course, especially related to nitrogen and sulfur. Time leaks of nitrogen and multiple applications is one of the things that can really improve nitrogen use efficiency. Tissue testing. Not many of the tools deal with tissue testing. Winfield probably collects more tissue samples than everybody else put together. But a lot of these are collected for purposes of research, trying to understand nutrient balances and this sort of thing. Several of the tools will talk about late season nitrogen status, sort of as a post-mortem now, to say, how well did we do? Previous crop, this is included in most of the tools that go so far as to make a nitrogen recommendation. In terms of residual nitrogen, do they incorporate this? Most of the tools recognize that it's important. They will either use a wet chemistry analysis type thing in most of the laboratories, or in one case, they use an ion exchange bioavailability. And I'll show you a little bit more about that, because it probably merits some more thought. During the growing season, people have taken tissue samples and done the traditional wet chemistry or combustion chemistry for nitrogen. There's also a tool out there coming from Yield 360 that I should at least mention to you. And I'll show you a picture in a moment, but it uses nitrate electrode, and it's intended to be fast and easy. That's where we'll stop for just a moment. But here it is, back of a truck. The idea being the farmer can go to the field. He can collect a moist sample so we don't have to dry it. We'll add some distilled water to it. We'll mix it up. And we're going to take this liquid now and run it through a system that uses a nitrate electrode. But those of you who've taken soil samples in the past, you realize it's rather difficult to mix a moist sample. It's especially if it's got much clay in it. So it's difficult to get a good sample. It might get you an answer fairly quickly, but somebody's got to go to the field and take those samples. So is it going to be spatial or is it going to be for the whole field? That's a question. And then the second question is the reliability of a nitrate electrode. They tend to be poisoned sometimes by bromide, organic compounds, and so the reliability is questionable at this point. This is the other type of ion exchange bioavailability. It's not new. The idea goes back to Dr. Stan Barber at Purdue University, where he spent his career and that of a number of graduate students working on this concept of a plant nutrient or plant root simulator. In practice, what it is, you see that the two little strips up there, one for anions and one for cations, but in the middle is a plastic material that has embedded on it an anion or a cation exchange resin. They're put into a soil and left there to equilibrate for a little while, 24 hours at a certain temperature, bring them out and use the traditional wet chemistry. Now, a little bit more about how this all works. Ken Greer provided me with the next series of slides, and for those of you who are in the room, you can go downstairs. He's got a display or an exhibit. You can ask him to see all of these and how it works interactively. It's really quite unique, but if you start across the top, the idea is we need to predict what the potential yield is. So they consider water, how much water is there, how much heat do we have? We're going to end up with some yield potential. And from that yield potential, we're going to back calculate and determine how much nutrient is required, how much of each one of these nutrients. Now, the second layer down there, it talks about basically water storage in the soil. So it uses sand and clay content, bulk density, soil pH, and each one of these act as a constraint, something that will potentially reduce that yield potential. So in this case, we just circled the nitrogen case, and I'm going to show you some more things in just a moment now. But the idea is that you put in your fertilizer cost, and now it automatically calculates profitability, and it's something that the farmers can see. The other neat thing is that instead of having farmers physically write in some numbers on a score sheet or a data entry sheet, it uses a slider at the base of each one of these, like bulk density, pH, move that back and forth, and it automatically makes the correction, makes the recalculation. So here's the examples of the anion and the cation. So this is what they do, and they then analyze for those components. In this case, it's just a composite of all those four examples. But the idea being also that now you can go in and play some games about what if I conserve and cut back on my nitrogen a bit. What am I doing to my yield? Maybe there's an opportunity to balance my other nutrients also. So in this case, it just shows what happens if you reduce your water availability. What can happen? It reduces yield, reduces the amount of nitrogen required, and this sort of thing. So if you're here, you can go down and see this in action. What I really wanted to get to is what happens here. Now, these are our nitrogen response functions for, they're color-coded here, nitrogen, NPK, and sulfur. And so you can see what happens as you move back, perhaps from maximum yield, move back on your nitrogen a bit. What might happen, and I'll show you in a minute what happens to yield, But in this case, you can cut back on P and K a bit, maybe save some fertilizer, save some money. And finally, this is just kind of a calculation, but in the case of what happens if you cut back on nitrogen, what's it do to profitability with P, K, sulfur? The reason for showing you this, folks, is farmers need something that is simple, easy, and intuitive. I think they would grab on something that they can see. They need to see things. And so that's the purpose of me suggesting that you go down and visit the exhibit, see how this works, and perhaps there's a way for you, if you're developing a tool, you can make it work for you. So how about remote sensing? Some of these tools offer satellite imagery, others aircraft. Some of them are playing or experimenting with drones, and some are potentially, I know they've used crop canopy sensors in the research, but maybe not commercially. They end up with various kinds of indices, but the point being that one of these pictures says a whole lot. And so the pictures don't lie, and so they're very informative. I'm going to show you a couple of examples, but I wanted to point out to you is that depending on what you want to do with the imagery, you may be able to get by with satellites. Maybe satellites are not good enough. And the example I use here is if you've got a 12-row implement, fertilizer, combine, whatever, the recommendation is that you need 4 to 5 pixels or cells within that width, because many times the satellite or the aircraft will not be perfectly lined up with the direction of your field. So you're going to sacrifice a couple on the outside edge, and you'd like to have 2 or 3 left in the middle. That's the idea. So if you want Landsat, that's free, but that's a big, big pixel. You come down to what is commonly available by RapidEye or Planet Earth, these kind of things. Those are about 5 meter. They don't cost too much, and there's at least 3 vendors that I know of that I've talked about, but they may not have the resolution to get you down to what you might have as a problem in your field. The further you go down the list, the more it's going to cost. So part of the problem is going to be that if you'd like to compare your yield map with your imagery, we'd like to think that yield maps have a nice square cell, you're moving through the field, but in fact, it takes a while for that grain from the outside of the header to make it to the middle. So what you're really collecting and generating is a wedge-shaped cell of some kind. Now think about your imagery that's available. You can get some with drones, you can get 2 or 3 inch spatial resolution. Lots and lots of cells. Or you can settle up with many fewer cells, and at some point it's probably going to require resampling of these different resolutions to come up with something that is usable by you. So just a caution. In terms of satellite imagery, a couple of examples. 2 different fields, 2 different farms. Anything in black is contracted. So this farmer paid 33 cents or 30 cents an acre to get a number of images throughout the year. What I wanted to show you then is the report that comes back to him. Early in the season, 1/4 of the pivot was fertilized with extra nitrogen. Got a little extra nitrogen. And so as you go through the season, you can see on June 19th, 23rd, these are pictures now that come back. As you get over toward June 28th, and certainly by July 12th, the NDVI image is no longer visible. It doesn't show you anything, any contrast, and yet you saw it earlier. And this is where other people have talked about you need to switch to a kind of image that does not saturate like this. And so if you were able to look really closely, and I think you can probably see this, down in that lower left-hand corner, that, in fact, you can see that portion that receives some extra nitrogen. So there's a lot of power here, but it may not have quite the resolution that is going to be needed. Now, here's an example of aircraft imagery with about 2-foot spatial resolution. You'll see, if you look carefully, you'll see sort of 2 sets of streaks in there. We asked the farmer, where's the road direction? What about those other ones? What's going on there? Well, this was anhydrous ammonia applied early in the year. The soils were a little bit wet. Mm-hmm. And you might say, well, this is compaction. As we looked at this further, they had a lot of rainfall after the anhydrous was applied. The compaction is what saved the nitrogen. It didn't allow the water to go through in those areas, just reverse of what you might think. But you would not see this with a satellite. That's the point I wanted to make. The other point I want to make is that remote sensing or sensors, what they're really monitoring is living biomass or plant vegetation and chlorophyll content or greenness. And I tried to show you with an example here of different levels of greenness. And at some point, you get out there to the point of saying, they all look alike. What do I do? Well, think about it this way. Living biomass tells you how big the factory is. And the chlorophyll, this is what's capturing the energy from the sun. How fast can it work? So you put these things together into one of these vegetation indices. The point is that sensors and remote sensing cannot detect excess nitrogen or luxury consumption. And then at some point, there's always a problem of how much background from the soil is being recorded by any of these sensors. So ask lots of questions. Ask lots of questions. And going back to the satellite imagery, some of the providers will only provide you a pretty picture. Some of them will process it to a vegetation index. So ask them, what am I going to get? How will I be able to use this? If you want more information about this table, this huge table that I made, it's populated and I try to keep it updated. I try to make it available as I hear about new changes and this sort of thing. I make it available to you, and you can have all these slides too. But what I'm going to do now is to move on to this new activity called Nutrient Star. It's an objective, science-based assessment education tool that's related to nitrogen use efficiency for these different tools and or products. So that's where we're headed. A little bit about this project. It was started in 2014, so that's when it came to life. It's in consultation with, at this point, there's 10 scientists and or consultants who are involved in evaluating and assessing the data that comes from these tools. It's supported by the Environmental Defense Fund. And the reason for this is that it emphasizes there's about 45 million acres of cropland in the U.S. That's a lot of land, but a lot of this is dealing with corn production in the Mississippi River Basin. So that's where it sort of comes from. The other part of it is, you say, well, why is this happening? Who's interested in it? And here I say, I'll just lump this together and say, well, this is the food chain, the supply chain. And you and your wives, your families, your friends, they would like to know more about the food they eat, what they're buying, where did it come from, how is it produced, probably with the perception that this affects the quality and sustainability of the farmers and who knows what else. So what they've done is said maybe 50% of this 45 million is a reasonable target. We can go after and see what we can do there. But at the same time, the food chain people realize we have to go back to the farmer. He's centered to this thing. And so we have to work with them to figure out how can we get all this material and information documented, at least in terms of nutrient losses. How we work with them because they have to manage risks and uncertainties, and they have to make a living. So everybody's involved, and we have to talk back and forth a lot. Now, from a farmer's perspective, farmers, if you look at any common magazine, you're going to realize that they're bombarded. They're overwhelmed with all kinds of information about this tool, that product, and I'm going to increase your efficiency, I'm going to increase your yield, more money in your pocket. So what do? That's the uncertainty, and they have to tune it for their own production system. This is not one tool for everything, but it's going to be a piece it together and make a package that works for you. Well, so when it comes down to the end, here's the farmer, and he knows people are knocking on his door saying, now what about water quality? Food chain people want to know this information, and yet he's got to provide food for his family. So it's got to be sustainable, and it's a lot of discussion that needs to go into this. So the goals, the ideas behind this Nutrient Star are, I've tried to highlight some of the key words, is to measure nitrogen use efficiency. That was the initial target, but hidden behind that, not hidden, but obvious, and a co-partner of this has got to be profitability to the farmer. And so we sort of view ourselves as one of these team members on this Nutrient Star as providing information, perhaps educational material, not only for the farmers, but the food chain people also need to know that farmers have to assume a lot of risk and uncertainty with weather. So information needs to go both ways. We need to keep it science-based, something that's defendable. And finally, how do we deliver these tools to a farmer that aren't overpowering and overwhelming to them? What Nutrient Star is not, it's not a consumer report. It's not Underwriter Laboratories, and it's not an accreditation. We're not putting a rank, we're not putting 5 stars, 3 stars, whatever. What we want to do is to provide credible information and analysis of how these tools perform. That's what we'd like to do. So who's doing all this? Here's the mugshots of those 10 people who were on the panel. Now, equally or even more important are the people behind the scene. These are the people that put it together, make it work, call the meetings, all these kind of things. So it takes a lot of people, a lot of effort. I show you this slide because I think it summarizes the focus is really on the farmer. They have to make money. They're the ones who are controlling the management systems. So they're the focus. What has happened recently is that the tractors, the combines, a lot of these implements are designed to upload whatever you're doing in the field, where you are in the field, goes to the cloud. And the idea being we're going to make it easier for the farmer now to integrate all these different activities so that at some point after harvest or when you want it, you can bring it down yourself and work on it, or give it to somebody else who will work on it for you. Consultants are going to be really important here because a lot of farmers say, oh, this is too much. I have too much to do. I'm going to turn it over to a consultant to do it. So this is what's basically happening. In terms of the farmer and what the focus of Nutrient Star is, we'd like to essentially assess these technologies, and a lot of them are models. They come down to models that include soils and climate. They're decision support tools, And we've heard a lot about the four R's, well, right place, time, those kind of things. Those are all part of it. The important thing, too, is that we need to have these things documented. In some cases, the in-season sensors, remote sensing will be appropriate. Other cases, we're only dealing with products, a nitrification inhibitor, or an encapsulated or more sustainable form of nitrogen. So we'd like to assess a number of different tools, and things will always be coming along. But one of our challenges has been, as companies and vendors provide this data or collect this data, it isn't always in the same format as the scientists would think. Well, we need it in a different way. It needs to be replicated. It needs to be all this stuff. And so what we've tried to do is to recommend what we think would be a preferred type of research plan, but realizing that we need to get this documented for the 4R purposes so we can truly analyze it and say, this is why something is different, why it didn't perform as we wanted. That brings into the idea of we need rainfall information, we need to know more about tillage, we need to know about how these things integrate together. And so what I'm going to show you now is the idea of what we call a TED. It's really a technology extrapolation domain. Dr. Ken Kassman on the group is the one who has spent a lot of time and effort putting this together, but what this each TED, what it amounts to is it includes growing degree days, temperature seasonality, and finally what they're calling aridity index. So this is a water status, water storage component. So these are ways that the country's broken up now, or you could break the soils up and say, do I have test studies, do I have information and data that represent this kind of situation? And you'll see some of the color patterns occur across the country. You'd think they may be different states, whatever, but in many cases, the situations are quite similar, and the soils information is very important. I'll show you an example. Each one of these TED zones has a number. And within this automated system now that they have, you can go in and identify a TED, and you can determine how many acres within the Corn Belt that constitutes. So at our meeting last week, they said that there are four TEDs that represent something like 21% of the corn production in the U.S. So it becomes a very big, maybe a powerful tool. And it might help some of the companies, some of the vendors, say, well, we need to have, and we'd like to have evaluations or assessments. In this TED, we need more over here. We don't know about that one. So that's the idea behind this, so that we can provide a bigger spread of where we have information. One of the really useful things, I think, to farmers as well as consultants will be the literature search that was done by and supported by the Environmental Defense Fund, but it went in product by product and pulled together all the published information that they could find and synthesized it. This is an example for nitropyrin, but it's done for each one of the products, and it's on the website, or will be very soon. So it's out there, it's convenient, and we hope that it's useful. One of the individuals on the team, Tom Morris, is really good with computers and realizes that as an extension agent, farmers don't like to spend a lot of time entering data. So he tried to minimize this by having a front-end collection sheet that transposes and repopulates the place where you'd calculate and do these things. So we've tried to make that part easy. Now we're going to show you some example data. We don't have a lot of data, but this is data from Adapt-N. They've started going back in 2011 to 2014. They had data from Iowa and New York. And so this is the data. Instinctively, you're going to draw some lines on here and say anything to the left of that vertical line, these applied less nitrogen. There were a few over there that applied more nitrogen. They got higher yields. And so this is the data set that we're going to work with. We started to analyze. What did it do in terms of profitability and yield? Take a look over on the right-hand side. You'll see that for the Iowa situation, on average, 10 pounds, $10. A little more valuable back in New York where they have more manure, this sort of thing. But also look at the variability, the spatial the coefficient of variation, really, really high. And most of that's attributed to the nitrogen rate. So being curious, I wanted to know more about this. And farmers want to know about productivity and nitrogen use efficiency. So this is a little truth table. You can sort of see that for the most part, a lot of the samples are over on the positive profit side and positive on the NUE side. But there's a few, those seven, are problem cases that need to be understood. About two-thirds of these samples came from New York. The color-coded there you can look at, but we don't have time for that right now. But what I wanted to know is, how do these things all shake out now in terms of profitability? And where were, what's the distribution here? So this is just a piano curve that shows you the distribution. I wanted to know, is this related now to change in yield or change in profitability? So you might say, I'll draw a line on there at $5 or 5 bushel per acre. That's probably 15 bushel or $15 per acre. But if you now look at this in terms of the change in yield, you'll see that there's some values on the far left and some on the far right, but a lot of them in the middle didn't make a lot of difference in terms of yield. What about N rate? There were a whole lot of them that received lower N rates. A few on the far right, and the explanation there we were told is that after the farmer had done his practice, it rained considerably, and the Adapt N approach, the farmer realized this was a problem, and he went in to fix it accordingly. So there's some local interpretation that's required. But the point was made is that we started with good producers, very good producers. And I'm a curious person. I wanted to know, well, in what way are they good? They have a good farmstead, good equipment. What about the nitrogen use efficiency? And so I calculated how many bushels of corn or how many pounds of nitrogen per bushel of corn. And I arbitrarily drew a line across there at one, saying this is maybe reasonable. There were a number of producers that applied some or considerably more nitrogen. And so we have to go in and understand why these decisions are being made. I'm about out of time. I will just say that you can go to the Nutrient Star website. You can see which products are being considered, which ones might be on the list, and what we think will be the activities over the next few years will be to expand and test different data sets as they come available, figure out better ways to work with the farmers, and especially how can we fairly analyze this information that's being collected, because it's being collected and provided to us by the vendors, by the farmers. We want to thank, going back, Walton family. These are some of the contributors to the Environmental Defense Fund. There are others, of course. But if you've got questions about the Environmental Defense Fund, the Nutrient Star part of this, Karen Chapman is sitting here in the front row, near front row, She can answer your questions, and she's got a presentation later in the week. So it's been really great for me to work with this group, very informative, broaden my perspective, and I will only comment that the speaker before me talked about the situation in California. I'll say that the folks in the Midwest with corn production, we've really got it easy compared to the difficulties in California. And with that, I'll say I'm the last speaker of the day.